This week, January 6, 2015, on The Digital Story, photo gear at CES, backlighting techniques, the Samsung NX3000 mirrorless camera, selfies get a bad rap, all of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story, the first show of 2015. Yay! It's going to be an exciting year, don't you think? Now, I'm at the Consumer Electronics Show here in Las Vegas. I'm recording this podcast from the New York Hotel, right in the middle of the madness. You may hear some of that in the background, actually, as the show goes on. Pay no attention. That's just life here in Vegas. Now, I will talk a little bit about some of the photography announcements that are going on this week, but I have a regular show for you also with some very interesting topics. We're going to start out this week with a snapshot. We'll do a weekly report, which will cover CES, and then I'll do a few feature stories. Let's get to it. Snapshot. Selfies get a bad rap. This is interesting. I've been thinking about this for a while, and I decided that I finally want to talk about it. In part, it could be because of the Samsung NX3000 that I'm going to talk about in the feature story that actually has a selfie function, so to speak. It's funny to me that for years, I mean years and years, and I've been a photographer for a long time, how we were absent from family photo albums, from slideshows of vacations, you know, all that kind of stuff, because we were the ones behind the camera taking the pictures. And a lot of times we just weren't in the pictures. Now, every now and then, of course, we would figure out a way to get in a group shot by using the self timer or some other techniques. But for the most part, photographers have been absent from the storytelling of all these events. So then we roll into modern times, and with mobile phones and all that kind of thing, selfies have become sort of a big deal. In fact, selfie is actually a word in the dictionary now. And as that phenomenon developed, people got down a little bit on the idea of taking a picture of yourself. Now, this could be because we see all sorts of selfies out there. If you follow Instagram or any of the social networks, you see selfies of regular people, and I would put myself and probably you in that category, very attractive women, sports figures, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of different types of selfie out there. It's a blanket description for something that just involves taking a self-portrait. However, for photographers, going back to what I call the regular folks, this is a chance now for us to be part of the experience, to be part of the story. So when we're traveling, let's say on vacation, yes, we take all the shots that we normally would take. We take the family shots, we take the scenics, we take the architecture, the cultural sense of the place, all that good stuff. And then maybe every now and then we turn the camera on ourselves with an interesting background or an interesting lighting condition, and take a few shots of us in that location too, and then mix that in with everything else that we would normally shoot. Personally, I think that's a good thing. I'm actually taking shots of me every now and then, and not because anyone wants to see an old guy with a camera, no, but it is part of my documentation for when I go to Las Vegas, for when I go to Havana, when I'm in New York, all that sort of stuff. Not only do I want to see everything else that's going on, I actually want me to be part of the story too. And in that sense, I think selfies do get a bad rap. I think just like anything else in photography or in life in general, when used in the spirit of storytelling, they're actually a good thing. And that's this week's snapshot. Hey guys, you want to the weekly update. So I hope you enjoyed some of the sounds of Las Vegas. I thought, since I have to deal with the ambient sounds of Sin City, I thought, well, why not record some of them and incorporate them into the show? So I hope that's fun for you. Let's talk a little bit about photography at the Consumer Electronics Show. I'll tell you this, photography is not a focus of what's going on here this year. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't photography to talk about, but I'll tell you what everyone is really focused on is connectivity, is smart home activity, drones are big, cars are big, all that kind of stuff. And there is some photography in there, but definitely is not the headliner of this particular event. Now, a few things that have been announced I want to talk about today. And as new things come out, I'll of course cover those on the digital story. The first item is from Canon, and it is the Kinect Station CS100. Canon has been playing around with this for a few years now, about 4 years actually, and they finally decided to release it. Essentially what it is, it's a media hub that has HDMI port that will plug into your HDTV. It has a Wi-Fi and NFC wireless connectivity. It has a card slot for both CF and SD cards, and it has a USB, I believe, 2.0 port. The idea is with this $299 device, you don't need a computer to enjoy digital photography. You connect this thing up to your TV, you leave it connected, and then if you have a modern Canon camera, something that came out in 2015 that has NFC in it, then basically you can take a bunch of pictures or record a bunch of video, go ahead and place it on the device. All that information will transfer onto the 1 terabyte hard drive that's in there, and then you can use the menu system that shows up on your HDTV to organize your photos, to look at them, to share them with others. You can also send shots to a PICT bridge printer for output that way, and you can share with other people via their web browsers. So devices such as an iPad would be able to log into it and actually look at the images. So it sounds pretty cool on first brush. I wrote about it on the digital story, but one thing that jumped out at me is it's great if you're Canon only, if you have brand new Canon cameras, and if you're not that concerned about RAW. And it does handle RAW, but it only handles the modern RAW files from Canon and not RAW files from anyone else. Basically, what you need to do is spend $299 for the hub and buy a new camera. Now, Canon did release 5 new compacts this week, and those compacts have an emphasis on connectivity. And of course, part of the thinking is that they would work with this hub, with this media hub that they've released also, the Kinect Station CS100. So it's great under those conditions. However, if you're a general photographer who uses different cameras, you shoot RAW files other than Canon RAW files from 2010 or newer, then probably not such a great deal. Because for $299, there are different ways to spend your media hub money, and some of them are probably more advantageous to those who use a variety of cameras. But it's an interesting idea. I like seeing Canon go in this direction. My personal preference would be I'd like to see them be a little bit more creative and open it up a bit more. However, this is what it is. It should be out in the springtime. And again, $299 for the Canon Kinect Station CS100. Now, some other fun items. Panasonic released a trio of Super Zoom cameras, and they look pretty nice. I mentioned earlier that Canon has 5 new compacts that they also released this week, or I should say announced this week. A fun device that I think is interesting to probably our audience is a device from Seagate, and is the Seagate 7, and it is a 500 gigabyte USB 3.0 hard drive that's very stylish, but the real zinger about this device is that it's only 7 millimeters thick. So you can have a 500 gigabyte hard drive that's only 7 millimeters thick, and it looks very stylish. It should go on sale here in a month or so for $99. There were a number of announcements where photography intersects with either home automation or connectivity. One of the best ones is a device called the iCam Pro HD, and it is a device that can have 360-degree surveillance in your house or at work or wherever you happen to put it. It has motion detection, it has audio detection, and even though it has a lens that's in the front, the whole unit will swivel around, and it has sensors in the back, sort of like mom having eyes in the back of her head can see you whenever you're misbehaving. So it's that sort of thing. It can upload footage directly to Google Drive. They have apps for both iOS and Android where you can monitor from your mobile device. And of course, you can use software on your PC that can have like up to 7 of these things in different locations, all be monitored on one screen on the computer. That looked pretty interesting, and it looked like one of the better home devices for surveillance or just, you know, monitoring. Surveillance sounds so like spy or something like that. It's not like that. Let's say monitoring. Let's say for maybe your newborn child, something like that. That's more pleasant than you know, waiting for burglars to break in. And then one last thing that caught my eye, and this is, again, early in the show, but the folks over at DJI, they have the Inspire 1 camera mount. Now, the Inspire 1 is a quadcopter that they released not that long ago. In fact, I covered it. I actually went to the launch party for it. And it is a beautiful quadcopter, very sophisticated, has a wonderful camera on it, very easy to control, HD, still photography, the whole deal. I mean, it's really slick. Thinking about using this device, that's great for your aerial shots. But what if you wanted to use that very nice camera that records 4K video on the ground too? And they were thinking about that, and they released a camera mount that is a control, so you can actually take the camera off the quadcopter, put it on this, it looks like a stick really, but it's electronic, it has connections, has controls, all that kind of stuff. You can take the camera off the drone, put it on this stick, this mount, and then, you know, shoot regular footage too on the ground. So suddenly, you know, it sort of enhances, you know, your investment in this camera and this quadcopter, and you still get all the benefits such as monitoring on an iPad or an Android device, all that kind of stuff that you get when the device is up in the air. So I thought that was pretty nice. That shows me that they're really thinking of the whole picture. What do people really need? The Inspire 1 camera mount is one of those examples of people really stepping back and saying, what does our audience want from us? And that is this week's Weekly Update. Let's get into the feature stories. I want to talk about a camera that isn't brand new. It actually came out in the summer of 2014, not that long ago, but definitely not breaking news like what we're seeing from Las Vegas right now. It is the Samsung NX3000. It comes in a kit with a 16 to 50 millimeter optically stabilized power zoom. And the whole thing is selling for around $400 right now. I actually got one on a Lightning deal at the end of 2014 with the lens for $299. And part of the reason why I just couldn't pass it up. I've wanted to give it a try, and at that price, I mean, that's basically the price of the lens. If you go on to B&H and you shop for the 16 to 50 millimeter power zoom lens, the NX mount for the Samsung cameras, you're going to see it selling for about $346. So to get the camera and the lens for $299, I thought that was a pretty good deal. I see it comes in different colors. I see the white version right now selling for around $340. The black and the brown version, I think, are up closer to $400. Either way, I thought it was a very interesting looking camera, and I like some of the features. So I've been testing it, and I have to tell you, I really like it. Now, one thing that I did was I also added on a prime lens, the 30 millimeter f2.0 prime lens. So it's very fast, but it's a very nice complement to the zoom lens, which of course goes from 3.5 to 5.6, as you would imagine on a kit lens. So why was I attracted to this camera? Well, first of all, it has an APS-C sensor in it, so it's got a nice big sensor, and it's 21 megapixels, and the camera itself is super light, and it's very compact. And then even with the 16 to 50 on there, which is more or less a pancake zoom, it's quite compact. And then you put the 30 millimeter on there, which is a pancake prime lens, and it's super compact. I mean, it won't fit in your shirt pocket, but it definitely will fit in your jacket pocket. And it's not very heavy, and you have a big APS-C sensor. Now, some of the things that are good about it, the image quality is very good, outstanding image quality with the camera. You have lots of resolution, over 5,000 pixels on the longest side. It's easy to use. I mean, the controls are very straightforward, very simple. The menu system is quite good. It has both NFC and Wi-Fi built in with companion apps for Android and iOS. And they work great on both platforms. I've tested them on both platforms. I talked earlier about selfies in Snapshot. This is one of the features of this camera that I wanted. The LCD is a 3-inch LCD. It flips all the way up, and then it has a face detection mode with either smile trigger or wink trigger, which is a hoot. Wink if you're not wearing glasses, though. I discovered that. So you can hold it out, flip the screen up, compose perfectly. It locks in on your face. And then you can either press the shutter or smile or wink at it. And it'll give you a brief countdown and then take the picture. And I wanted some sort of selfie camera because of my travels that are coming up in Cuba. One of the things that I want to do is take my picture with other people and then have some of the environment there. And I wanted to be able to do that myself. Not really comfortable handing the camera off to other people. I don't like to hand my camera to other people to take pictures because they may take a picture or they may just take my camera. So I wanted something that I had a little more control over, and this camera fit the bill perfectly. Now, one of the things that a lot of people that commented on what I've written so far is that it does not have an electronic viewfinder, it doesn't have the capacity for electronic viewfinder, and it doesn't come with an optical viewfinder option either, even though it does have a hot shoe that's positioned right over the lens. And I hear exactly what you're saying. I mean, when you're working out in bright light, an LCD-only camera, I think, is very difficult to use. Now, when I'm working with the 30 millimeter lens, what I did is I repurposed an Olympus optical viewfinder that I had for my 17 millimeter Olympus, which works out to be, 34 millimeters. This is, I think, around 43. So it's a little wider than what I'm actually going to be composing with. However, it's been very easy for me just to say, go right inside the lines instead of outside of them. And that has helped. But most of the time when I'm using this camera, I'm using it indoors and in low light and things like that. So it hasn't been an issue. And when I'm outdoors in bright light shooting, then of course I have my Olympus OMD, any of my Olympus OMDs, which are fantastic for that kind of shooting. This camera is not instead of those. It's finding a way to augment my kit so that I have the capability for all the types of shots that I want to take, including theme of this week, selfies when I'm in exotic locations. So the non-electronic viewfinder, the non-standard optical viewfinder, is definitely an issue with it. Another kind of odd thing is that it uses micro SD cards instead of SD cards. And I'll tell you, with my hands, I have fairly large hands, those micro SD cards are so small. I feel like, you know, that I have to be so careful where I set it down or what I do with it, because if I set it down in sort of this mindless mode that I can be in sometimes, I will lose the thing. I know it. It'll just evaporate into the air. So having the micro SD card, I see it as kind of a downside. I prefer SD cards myself. I like having something a little bigger, a little easier to hang on to and not lose. So that's another thing to be aware of. And then finally, there just aren't a lot of buttons and dials on this thing. It's very straightforward. You have only, you know, one adjustment dial. You don't have twin dials like we're used to on the Olympus camera. So you're kind of going back in time. If you've been shooting with a sophisticated camera these days, the LCD is not a touch screen, so you navigate on the LCD. So there are some things like that. However, that being said, if those things don't drive you crazy, the image quality is amazing. And especially when I shoot with the 30 millimeter lens that I got to go with the 16-50, shooting with a 30 millimeter lens at f2, and they said in the description of the 30 millimeter lens, it's designed to create beautiful bokeh. And they aren't kidding about that. If I shoot wide open with this lens going onto this APS-C sensor, it is really beautiful. The backgrounds are fantastic. The fall off is pretty fast. And I really get a look that I haven't been able to get with any other super compact camera. Now, I'm not carrying around the Sony full frame, you know, A7R or any of that. I'm not going to spend that kind of money. But again, for a camera that's in the $300 to $400 range, the optics are exquisite. There's a whole line of cameras. They have different bodies if this body is too simple. But I haven't talked about Samsung a lot, and I sort of just wanted to put it on the radar because I've tested three of their cameras prior to this one, and I did not like them. There was just things about the styling. I don't know. They just didn't thrill me. This one with a bit of the retro styling with a nice attractive metal top plate with the great Wi-Fi connectivity with the wonderful optics, the affordable price, and then that nice big sensor in a small package. It's a camera that I just wanted to put on your radar either for you or as people come to you asking for advice and they don't have a lot of money to spend. This might be one that you want to look at. Let's take a stroll over to the screening room. Yes, the screening room is back, and I'm leading off 2015 with a great selection. One of my favorite teachers, as you may know, and also a good friend of mine, Ben Long, has a new title called Exploring Photography, Backlighting with Ben Long. Yes, Ben is talking about not only how to deal with backlighting, but how do you use backlighting to your advantage? And this is something that comes up time and time again in my workshops. I'm always trying to get people to shoot into the light for more drama, for more texture, for interesting effects. And if they want, you know, even to play with silhouettes and things like that. In this video training, Ben tackles all of those subjects and really does some nice work, and he has a very attractive model also for the portrait shots, something that I thought was pretty cool in addition to the landscapes and the other goodies that he's shooting. You can see the introductory movie by going to the TDS screening room at lynda.com, which is lynda.com/thedigitalstory, lynda.com/thedigitalstory. I'll have a link to the site in the show notes, and you can go over there, you can watch the introductory movie, see how you feel. If you like it, then you can start your 7-day free trial. and watch the entire title plus all the other, I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of photography titles that are in the lynda.com catalog, including more than 20 titles by yours truly. So anyway, this week's screening room pick is Exploring Photography, Backlighting with Ben Long. You can see the introductory movie by going over to the Digital Story screening room at lynda.com/thedigitalstory. Story number three. This is a question that came in from one of our Virtual Camera Club members, Robert. And I thought it was sort of interesting. Now, a lot of times when questions come in, I'll just answer them straight up through email. But Robert's question, I thought, well, maybe I'll share this with the rest of us because I think a lot of people might be interested in this. Basically, what his question is, how much faith should he put in DXO numbers? Now, we all see different ratings for cameras and lenses out there. A Pop Photo has their optical bench. DXO has their own method of testing the quality and sharpness and aberrations, distortion, all that kind of stuff with cameras and lenses. And his question is, I'll just go ahead and sort of read what he said. He's talking about Canon, which he's shooting with right now, versus Sony and Nikon. And he says, and all of the DXO numbers favor the Nikon and Sony cameras over Canon. So my real questions are, am I putting too much into DXO numbers? Do you think Canon is going to address their disadvantage? Canon tends to rate lower than Sony and Nikon in these tests. So he's saying, do you think Canon is going to address the disadvantage in high ISO noise, dynamic range, picture quality, and color depth? Or are they going to focus more on the ability of their cameras to do video better? Knowing that I want to shoot in low light, am I looking at the right attributes of camera performance to get better quality pictures? So he's saying, okay, I'm shooting with Canon right now. I look at my camera, I think he has a 70D, and I think he has another one too. And he's seeing that his cameras are getting toasted in DXO tests compared to equivalent camera bodies from Sony and Nikon. And the reason why I wanted to do this on the show is because I think it's interesting that for some reason, Canon has never fared well with DXO. Their cameras are consistently rated lower in terms of low light performance than Sony and Nikon, for example. At first, that troubled me because I shoot Canon also. I mean, I still shoot with my 5D Mark II a lot, and I have a 70D also, and I have a whole bunch of lenses, and, you know, I think it's a pretty good system. But I've never been motivated to move to Nikon or to Sony based on what I saw with the DXO test. And the reason being is because I go off how my pictures look on my computer screen and how they print out of my printer and how they perform based on the way that I'm using them. And to be honest with you, I can take a camera from Canon and a lens combination that hasn't fared well in these tests, shoot at ISO 3200, use good technique, look at those images on my MacBook Pro Retina display and actually be pretty happy with them. So that's my bottom line on this, not only for these tests, but for all the other tests that are out there. Tests are helpful when making buying decisions. But once you have gear in your hand, then really the true test is how does it perform for you? How does it look to your eyes? I don't recommend second-guessing gear that you have based on any test that's out there. If the images look good to you, trust that. Have faith in your own eyes. Now, if you're out there and you know that you have to make a change or you know that you have to buy new equipment, then look at not only one test, for example, DXO, but try to look at a number of tests. Look at what DP Review is doing. Look at what Photography Blog is doing, ImagingResource.com, DXO, all of those, and then kind of roll that up to help you make the best buying decision possible. But beware of being caught in the numbers game with photography. This is something, it's a trap that we fall into all the time. Use your eyes, look at the images. If you really have a question, then rent the gear that you want to buy. Rent it for a week from BorrowLenses or someone. Test it out and see how it performs for you. If it's not getting the job done, then go back out on the market, review those tests, and try to find something that better suits you. So, Robert, I hope that little speech there helps you a bit as you try to figure this out. And for the rest of you, I'm just saying, numbers are great, but they are not everything. The bottom line is how the picture looks. Okay, let's wrap up with a little virtual camera club news. Hey, we have a new photo assignment. It's a new month, and we have a new photo assignment. Our photo assignment for January 2015 is backlighting. Wow, what a coincidence. Gee, backlighting. And what if I wanted some inspiration on working with backlighting? Oh, the screening room in Ben Long. Yes, it's magic how this all just fits together beautifully. You have until the end of January to submit your photo. If you have any questions about doing that, just go to the member info page at thedigitalstory.com and you can get the scoop there. But basically, you attach your photo any size you want. You just make sure that you put December 2015 photo assignment in the subject line. Ship it off to me. Try not to strip out the metadata if you can. I like having that show up in the gallery. And then you will be participating in the monthly assignment with an opportunity to be selected as the Sizzle Picks Pick of the Month, which means that if Sizzle Picks chooses your image from the gallery of photos in that photo assignment, you can get a free Sizzle Picks of your image. And we just had the last winner that I mentioned a couple podcasts ago who hadn't contacted me yet. He did, and we got his Sizzle Picks underway. It's very exciting. It's very exciting to not only be acknowledged for your great work, but then also to get a Sizzle Picks out of the deal. And Sizzle Picks is a sponsor of the photo assignment and sponsor of the digital story. SizzlePix at sizzlepix.com. And by the way, it's interesting, you know, we've been talking about the credit terms that they have there. That's changed. That's changed. The whole pay later thing has changed. Now it's called PayPal Credit. PayPal Credit. Same deal. You can buy your Sizzle Picks now. You have PayPal credit option when you place your order. You don't have to pay for 6 months. And you can use your Sizzle Picks for gallery showings. You can sell them. You can do all that kind of stuff. Give them as gifts. And then know that you have a few months to gather the money and pay it off when the time comes. That all now is bill me later is no more. It's now PayPal credit. So if you see PayPal credit there when you go to order, you know what's going on because you listen to the podcast. Sizzle Picks, it's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. And then the good folks over at Red River Paper that have a beautiful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper and the suppliers of the best photo paper in my world anyway. Wide variety of surfaces. Excellent pricing. They make the paper, they sell the paper, they pass those savings along to you. And along those lines, they still have the 10% off your next order going right now. That's good through January 15th of this year, one per customer. And you just use the code STORY10X when you're checking out, STORY10X when you're checking out. Now, Red River Paper also has a tile on all the pages of the digital story. That'll take you over to their landing page, and you can surf around from there. You can see special offers. Use the code STORY10X and save yourself 10%. Finally, I want to thank everyone who recently reviewed the TDS podcast in iTunes. Every now and then I mention that I like to have those reviews refreshed so that when new listeners come by and they check out the podcast on iTunes. They see current reviews in addition to the over 100 and some odd reviews that are already there. A bunch of you went on recently and I thought wrote some very insightful comments, and I appreciate you taking the time to do that. Again, fresh reviews in iTunes are a good thing. It really helps new listeners know what to expect when they download the podcast and hopefully enjoy it and hopefully subscribe. All right, that's going to do it from New York, New York Hotel here in Las Vegas. Recording with my travel rig. I'm going to go to a press event here in about an hour. Maybe I'll learn some new stuff that I'll be able to pass along to you on the digitalstory.com and next week's podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to sitting down with you again next week. Until then, have a fantastic start to your new year. Bye-bye.